music in the United States in the first part of the century. One was Broadway, the second was Tin Pan Alley, and the third was Hollywood. Those were the three fonts from which all of our popular music came. And I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, of all of them, the heavy plurality came from Broadway. And I remember it well. I remember being in Philadelphia working for CBS when Fiddler on the Roof opened in New York. And I'm driving around Philadelphia, not thinking about any much, and all of a sudden on WIP 610, the announcer would say, "And now here's Matt Monroe with his new hit from Fiddler on the Roof, Miracle of Miracles." And you'd hear Matt Monroe singing Miracle of Miracles. And I'd be sitting in my mother's apartment in Philadelphia, and then somebody would say, "And now here's Patti Page with her new big hit from Fiddler on the Roof. I used to tell myself I had everything." And you'd hear that. And then you'd be driving along later. "Here's the Ame Brothers with their new hit from Fiddler on the Roof, Sunrise, Sunset." And then when I got to New York, I already knew the score. The score was in my mind. The score was on the airways. The score was in the piano bars all over Philadelphia. It was really wonderful. And that's how Broadway music became popular music. As a matter of fact, Tin Pan Alley, in the old days before recording, was the way people got recording artists to record the music. You would get down to Tin Pan Alley on 28th Street, and you'd hear a piano version of a certain song. You'd say, "Hey, I'm a singer, I'm Russ Colombo, for example. I like that song, I'm going to record that song." When Broadway came along in recordings, they would actually do demonstration records. The most famous person who did that was a woman named Rose Marie June, J-U-N. Rose Marie June was paid $25 to do a demo record of On the Street Where You Live, and then the people who controlled that song would go to Frank Sinatra or Matt Monroe or the Ames Brothers or Don Cornell or Eddie Fisher and say, "Hey, here's really a good song. Would you like to record it?" And that's the methodology by which these songs became recorded hits. And so what we're going to do today, and my hour here always goes so fast, so much music, so little time, is talk about some of these things and show you some of the ways that these wonderful songs evolved from Broadway shows into popular records. And we're going to start with one from the great musical How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying by the great Frank Lesser. Now, Frank Lesser was actually one of the greatest of them all. He was very idiomatic in the way he did Broadway musicals. He did Where's Charlie back in the 40s. He did what many people think is the definitive Broadway musical, Guys and Dolls, in 1950. He did The Most Happy Fellow later, and he got a Pulitzer Prize for a show that he actually didn't like all that much. One of the few things about which I disagree with Frank Lesser, I like How to Succeed, and he got a Pulitzer Prize for that. He also was a great pop songwriter earlier. He, in World War II, wrote a song which you may remember called Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. That was Frank Lesser. He came from a very cultured family. They were disappointed that he went into pop music. They wanted him to go into popular music, classical music, but he went to pop instead. A couple of interesting things about how people reacted to Frank Lesser. In Guys and Dolls, he was trying to be idiomatic. So in the opening song, Guys and Dolls, there's about gambling, right? So one of his lyrics was, "Call it hell, call it heaven, but it's a probable 12 to 7. So you see how he said what he wanted to say by using the vernacular of these people who happen to be gamblers. And later he did the same thing, call it dumb, call it funny, but it's better than even money. And Cole Porter, the unbelievably great Cole Porter, said about Frank Lesser, "How does he think that stuff up?" That's an amazing compliment from Cole Porter. But the more interesting compliment even came from Stephen Sondheim. You know, the idea is to have lyrics that fit into the song. Well, there's a song from the musical you're about to hear, another song from How to Succeed, called Paris Original. And in that song, Paris Original, he's got a lyric called "Some Irresponsible Dress Manufacturer." Okay? "Some Irresponsible Dress Manufacturer." Now, that doesn't sound exactly like a breathless lyric, does it? But somehow, Frank Lesser set that to music. "Some irresponsible dress manufacturer." And Stephen Sondheim, the great Stephen Sondheim, was heard to say, "Anybody who would set the word 'some irresponsible dress manufacturer' to music has my undying respect." And so it was. The song we're going to hear two versions of from How to Succeed in Business is "I Believe in You." That was in 1961 that this musical came along, won a Pulitzer Prize for Frank Lesser, and by the way, had a very interesting cast. It was kind of a last hurrah for Rudy Valley, who played a nice part in that show. Robert Morse was in that show playing the lead, J. Pierpont Finch, and Charles Nelson Reilly, doing one of his great comedic turns, was in that musical as well. I Believe in You is a song sung in the show by Robert Morse, who's a very egotistical, arrogant, pompous young man, the star of our show. And in the show, he sings it to himself. He's actually in the washroom singing to himself, I Believe in You. It's a narcissistic song by this great great man. And we're going to hear an interesting two interesting versions of that in a minute. The lyrics for I Believe in You are sensational. Frank Lesser is unparalleled. You have the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. And again, notice the internal rhyme here. Yet there's an upturned chin and the grin of impetuous youth. And then he has a nice metaphor. You have the brave, bold spring of a tiger that quickens your walk and sound of good, solid judgment whenever you talk. How clever can you get? And in the end, he invokes booze by simply saying, to see the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth, and the slam, bang, tang, and reminiscent of gin and vermouth. It's a remarkable lyric. Now, the first version we're going to hear of this song is by Frank Lesser himself. It is amazing to me when you think about a classic musical like Guys and Dolls or How to Succeed, which we know and love, part of our landscape, that these guys, as great as they were, had to work to get money. That Frank Lesser didn't wake up and say, I want money, and then you get, you know, a couple million dollars to do this show. It wasn't that way. These guys were going out begging, pleading. In many cases, they were unsuccessful in getting money. So Frank Lesser, as is the case with most of the people who wrote, would do his own demo records, and then they would backers auditions to come and say, would you like to invest in this show? So we're going to hear first Frank Lesser actually singing his version of I Believe in You. And then we're going to hear an amazing version of that by Frank Sinatra. The Frank Sinatra version of this song is from one of the three albums that he did with the great Count Basie. This one was arranged by Quincy Jones, about whom, by the way, there is a new documentary to which I commend you. Now, Frank was as happiest when he was singing with the big band. You have to remember, Frank was coming of age in the 1930s. He was a teenager in the early 1930s. He loved the big bands. This was the height of the big band era. He loved these guys. He came across the Hudson River to see and hear the big bands. And so, Frank, I actually think that Frank was energized by big bands. I think in some ways he wanted to be a sideman. I think he wanted to be one of those. It's one of the reasons he was so great, because he loved musicians and they loved him. He dug this. He wasn't an arrogant person. Just as a matter of fact, when Frank recorded, he didn't go, as they typically do, into an isolation booth. He wanted to be out there in front of that band, feeling that band, being part of that band. At the same time, and on the other hand, the great Count Basie was actually kind of starstruck. And he loved Frank. So Frank and Count really became wonderful friends. They did three great albums together, and it showed that they were really on the same page. Now, the first thing you're going to hear then is Frank Lesser doing this song. And think about this. When Frank Lesser recorded what you're about to hear, nobody knew anything about this song. They didn't know anything about this show. It was Frank Lesser saying, this is what I wrote, or you'd be interested in investing in my musical based on this book, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. A couple of things I want you to notice about this. At one point, when he says that upturned chin and the grin of impetuous youth, you hear Frank Lesser going, ha, 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 a little ha, 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 like that. Try to hear for that. He does it again. The brave, bold spring of a tiger that quickens your walk. Ha, 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 ha. Why am I interested in that? Because if you listen to the original cast album, this was sung long before they cast Robert Morse in this show, you're going to hear Robert Morse doing the same thing. So that when you hear Robert Morse doing that, you may or may not realize that Frank Lesser actually conceived that utterance of those syllables in the whole idea of the song. It wasn't just something that was done at the recording or by Robert Morse. It was done because Frank Lesser felt it would work better that way. Another thing to notice, and Frank is playing his own piano here, of course, is Frank Lesser. you're going to hear kind of a lilting thing at the end of the line. When I go like that, that will be the lilting thing. The interesting thing about that lilting thing, you don't know, when I do this, it's the lilting thing. That always means lilting thing. Then you will see that in the original cast arrangement of that song on the album, you hear, feel that same thing. Mm-hmm. So that again, Frank Lesser, in a way, orchestrated that song on the piano even as he was doing it. By the way, Frank Lesser was a chain smoker. He died very early, unfortunately, of cancer. And even on the CD from which I got the first record you're about to hear, he is smoking a cigarette. We will then go directly into the amazing Frank Sinatra tour de force of this song. Now, one of the things that always interests me is when you write a song like this or like any song, what must it be like to hear somebody make an amazing arrangement and performance of that song? What must it be like? It fascinates me that he would write a song like I Believe in You, and then all of a sudden there's Count Basie and Quincy Jones and Frank Sinatra and 40 of the greatest musicians in Los Angeles being the Count Basie Orchestra add strings for some of the songs in that album. Doing that song must have been so amazing. I remember talking to Les Brown in the band of Renown, the last couple of years of his life. He had the second to last, the penultimate big band hit, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, in 1948. And I said, Les, did Irving Berlin ever hear that? Because think Irving Berlin had written that song decades earlier. Now all of a sudden in 1948, this is an amazing big band arrangement of this song. And what must it be like to be Irving Berlin hearing another iteration of his classic, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm? And I said, Les, did Irving Berlin ever hear that? Unless, not as far as I know, he never called me. But I will tell you, at one point, Fred Astaire called me and said, I want to dance to that record. So he had something, but whether Irving Berlin heard it and cared, we don't, at least Les Brown didn't know. The Frank Sinatra arrangement is astounding. Notice that there's something in there. Remember, this is lilt, this is punch. And punch is not a musical term, but I love that it's a staccato brass. You're getting a lot of punches when I go like that. Notice the punches. Then there's a lot of socking the bass in this thing. It just moves along brilliantly. There are cap trumpets later. I'm going to go like this. I'm trying to point out cap trumpets to you. And notice Frank Sinatra doing some of his signature things. I Believe in You, the first time he says that, he elongates the word believe, and it's just, at the time, it was a revolution. He was doing stuff like that. The instrumental bridge, of course, is great for the Basie Orchestra. And notice at the end, Basie comes in with his traditional three notes, right? Plunk, 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 and then out. That Basie understood as more than any musician in the world that less is more. Basie could swing more with three notes than most people could swing, you know, in the entire symphony orchestra. He was just amazing. He knew that he was in the groove, and he didn't have to say anything more than those three notes. And because he used those a lot, they would call him Plunk, Plunk Basie. So here we go. This is going to be Frank Lesser trying to get money so he could do this show, followed right by Frank Sinatra.